And now, your go-to source for year-round fantasy hockey advice, DFS and betting coverage. This is NHL Fantasy on Ice.
What's going on, everybody? Thursday morning, NHL Fantasy on Ice. Pete and Nick back with you, reacting to some of the debuts of some of the guys that were traded at the trade deadline. And we got a great guest on today, Colby Armstrong. What's going on, Nick?
Time is flying by, Pete. As you know, we're getting closer and closer to the Stanley Cup playoffs and the fantasy playoffs. But I put together an intro for today's guest. You ripped it there for sure, but here we go. Free the pipes. Today's guest enjoyed a very solid 9-year career in the NHL, one that was spent predominantly riding the coattails of Pittsburgh Penguins captain Sidney Crosby. Oh, that continues to this day. He played for Pittsburgh, Atlanta, Toronto, and then Toronto's hated rival, the Montreal Canadiens. Yeah, we know money talks. These days, he's still very much in the game, currently plying his craft in media, covering the NHL for both Rogers Sportsnet in Canada and also as a Pittsburgh Penguins analyst. Welcome to the NHL Fantasy on Ice podcast, Colby Armstrong.
That's very nice. That's very nice. I appreciate that. I love the little dig on the Canadian signing. I mean, we know money talks, but we also know money walks, Nick, as I got bought out from the Leafs. So yeah, that's what happened to me. That's how I ended up in Montreal. But the coattails thing isn't far off. You're correct on that.
I'm a big revenge guy. Is that why you signed with Montreal, just to annoy Toronto?
Yeah, that's right. That's pretty on brand for the Nick Elberga brand. I know you've copyrighted revenge. So, thanks you guys. Thanks for having me on, Pete. Also, thanks for having me to talk about some hockey. Obviously, exciting time too, right? Like just right after the trade deadline. So we get to see kind of the sprint to the finish here in the last under 20 games that's remaining.
Yeah, absolutely. And since you're connected to the Pittsburgh Penguins, let's start there. I mean, this team just got better at the deadline, adding obviously Ricard Raquel, who made his debut the other day, didn't score a point, but factors into their top nine and makes it stronger. To me, I'm wondering, like, is this all in Pittsburgh Penguins? Like, is this team going to make a run to maybe the Eastern Conference final? I see the path for them in the Metro. What do you think, Colby?
Yeah, I think it's going to, I think obviously opponents is going to be key, like how they, everyone slots going into the playoffs. And I think, you know, starting to ask questions, especially right in the East, the teams have been solidified in the playoffs for how long? It's just going to be exchanging for position. So, I was sitting there on trade deadline watching everyone else do everything. And I was going, come on, Hextall, let's go do something. Because, you know, personally, I know I cover the Penguins here, but I think they put themselves in a position where I don't think a lot of people thought or, you know, were willing to say like, hey, yeah, the Penguins could be a contender again this year. And although I think they're just outside the bubble of those, you know, upper echelon teams that we talk about more so, I think they've, you know, put themselves right there. And, you know, you can't go against this core, man. And I think everyone kind of did. No Gino, no Sid to start the season. And all they did was battle themselves into a great position. They get those guys back. And I saw a message today that Sid's on pace for about 116 point season. And to say that he's regressing or he's getting old is true, but he's having an unbelievable year coming back off that hand or wrist surgery that he had. And to get Raquel, like, I think that's a big move for them. Look, they've got guys that have, you know, gone stale through the middle of their lineup. Kapanen's having a really challenging year. Rodriguez came out of the gates on fire. He's been engulfed in slumps and hasn't been able to score. It's completely dried up. McGinn had his spurts with it as well. He's injured now. So I think, you know, the addition of Raquel, and they kept saying our cap space, we can't do anything, our cap space, for them to go and, you know, make some moves and get a player of Raquel's ability. And I know his last couple of years have been a little bit down comparatively to what I think is expected of him, but a guy when slotted into this top six and where they're going to fit him in, I think is huge for the Penguins because they were lacking that kind of middle of the road, middle of the lineup scoring for this team. And it's gone in massive chunks, especially in the last few months. So I thought a big move for them to kind of keep them in the hunt with all these teams that have that made moves and beefed up.
Well, firstly, I thought you did a kick-ass job on the panel as part of the panel on Sportsnet on deadline day, but it wouldn't deadline day without asking you about February 26, 2008. You know what I'm saying? The Pittsburgh Penguins acquire Marian Hossa and Pascal Dupuis from the now defunct Atlanta Thrashers in exchange for Colby Armstrong, Eric Christensen, Angelo Esposito, and a 2008 first rounder. Tell us about that day. What do you remember? And I'm sure, I think you told me on my now dead podcast, Unmuzzled. Didn't your mom tell you about the trade or something?
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Trade deadline day was awesome the other day. First of all, I hadn't been up to Toronto in so long too. So it was really nice to see like everybody. And so Sportsnet of course has a new studio too, which I haven't seen either. So to wheel around in there and check it out, was really nice. See my coworkers and friends in there was awesome. But yeah, that day we talked a lot about that trade, obviously sharing stories and Jamal Mares and Stewie and PJ Stock. It was a lot of fun. And my mom called me at 3:02. My phone started blowing up as I was napping to play the Islanders that night on the road. So it was interesting how she broke the news to me that I was going to Atlanta before I'd heard from anybody, dead sleeping in a pregame nap, getting ready to go. And then I was left with my toothbrush and one pair of underwear for the next 3 weeks as I went taking off to Atlanta. So that's what happens. It's crazy. We're seeing all these guys' stories, of course, Dadonov issue with like a trade and then getting revoked. Like, I mean, what kind of craziness is that? Yeah. Raquel flew in, just for example, from Anaheim on a red eye and played, here in Pittsburgh the other night. You get to play 3 games in 4 nights. Did he go to Pittsburgh or did he go to the American Hockey League? That's ridiculous, right? With that schedule. So it's crazy things happen. You get uprooted. You've got to move quick. You've got to make things happen quick. And, from my experience, though, Nick, it caught me completely off guard. And maybe that's just because I'm a dummy. But at the end of the day, I think that's the main reason. But at the end of the day, it's a wild trade deadline day. It's always kind of a wild day, regardless if you're ready for it or not, just because of, what kind of transpires after that. Guys, Raquel would leave his wife and his pregnant wife at home because she's due in June, I believe. So, he's on this trip and mission and this trade for the time being by himself out here to Pittsburgh. So there's lots of sacrifices, lots of moving parts, lots of craziness that happens. And mine was no different, trying to get my equipment from that old Nassau Coliseum. I know you're a big fan of that place, Nick. And
love it.
and getting to the airport with no knowledge of like where to get our tickets, what's going on, how do we operate this? So it makes for a pretty wild day, I think, for a lot of these players.
Crazy stuff. Yeah, they were talking about how Fleury, I know he got there later that night and his kids are in elementary school. So how do you even begin to process that, let alone make it happen and get there to back up Cam Talbot that night? But anyway, you mentioned the Dadonov trade being rescinded. And that kind of just like adds to the woes of the Vegas Golden Knights right now, because they were really relying on that cap hit to be gone. And now he's back. So, what do you make of what's going on in Vegas? It seems like ever since Eichel suited up for them, they've gone completely off the rails. I know it's not connected to the player entirely, but they've lost 7 of their past 9. And now they're like in terms of games played, that's working against them. This team may very well miss the playoffs right now.
Yeah. I think what is there, 4 games in hand for Dallas and some other teams. And they've got 16 games left this season. So I think they're pretty banged up to some key players as well. But like this team from a few years ago, the style of play and what they look like has been kind of flipped over. It's kind of different than what we saw. I think, Golden Knights have been wildly aggressive in going and acquiring and using their capital to acquire, bigger name guys in their lineup and first rounders and in exchange for, guys like Max Pacioretty and Eichel and others. So it's been a crazy whirlwind for this young franchise of what they've, what they started out as and now kind of what they turned into. And it's amazing how they're kind of like mainstream expectations. Like we talked about that out of the gates, but like they've taken it to a new level. They're fairly aggressive. They've got themselves jumping through hoops with the cap already in their short time in the league. And really quite a different story that we see with, a newer franchise in Seattle. That's kind of, it seems to me like they're taking the massive long road and like patience approach, where Vegas came out of the gates with success and now it's just like put their foot on the gas and trying to like force things, make things work. And, you look at the Fleury-Leonard situation and what they had in goal and how important that position is and, what Fleury's been able to do and winning a, you know, a Vezina trophy also before he, you know, took off. It's pretty crazy to see the situation they're left there with an injured Leonard and, you know, kind of a question mark in the crease right now.
Hockey karma is a you know what, if you know what I'm saying. Yeah. I'm glad you brought up Marc-Andre Fleury. What's it like to be teammates with the Flower, and how do you like that fit in Mini?
Yeah, I like it. Well, you kind of hear some buzz that it might have happened. And I know there was obviously massive, you know, Toronto media pressure where they were saying he's coming to Toronto. But I give Billy G a lot of credit. I like what he did. I like what he did with all his deals and the people that he brought in. And, you know, they're right there on the edge and fighting for everything. And they go and establish like a pretty solid goaltending tandem, Fleury. He's going to fit in so easy. I'm telling you, he's like the best teammate, the easiest guy, happy every day, like never a bad moment, loves to work hard, has fun out of working hard. Like his energy is like so contagious when you're around him, whether it's work or play or having fun or messing around, that it makes days just so light and easy. And, you know, of course he reunites with Billy Guerin, who he won a Stanley Cup with in 2009. So it's kind of a perfect, easy match for them, but they went and got some really solid pieces and some guys that are like, you know, have, I think, personality. Like, that's what I call it. Like they add personality to your lineup. Yes. They, you know, the attributes of the players, but that's kind of what I call it. So, I like what Mini's done. I think they're tough to play against as it was. I thought they were, you know, climbing out of this kind of little hole that they were in, or stagnant Minnesota Wild times. And they've turned into this like electric, and, you know, Kaprizov, I think, has a lot to do with, you know, the kind of eyeball factor to looking at this team, a team that you probably overlook a lot, but he's gone and kind of bolstered his lineup. And I think made them like a really, you know, a tough, much tougher team to play against. So what do you make? Added, I think, four players that are contributing guys that change the look of your team and add like that personality and swagger and confidence to your team. I love that video of DeLaurier. I was hoping the Penguins would get a guy like DeLaurier. I'm sure a lot of teams were kind of going, man, we need a guy like DeLaurier. Well, one, he kind of produced too, but like, who did he drag out of the crease there the other day? He just like grabbed him by the scruff of the neck, like a mama dog grabbing a puppy and pulling it back onto the dog mat. Is kind of funny, but he brings kind of like this attitude, right? He brings like a little attitude to the team, and he'll be an important piece for them as well.
Yeah, they have kind of that grit on all their different lines, yeah, and one player or another. And I love like Greenway. Once you get to the playoffs, I feel like he has that intimidation factor for sure. He's a tank out there that could score on any given shift. And, you know, looking back at the deadline and some of these, you know, teammates affected and maybe under the radar moves, like I saw Marcus Johansson's playing some time on the top line for the Capitals in his old spot going back to town. There's Kevin Hayes benefiting as a teammate after his guy Claude Giroux got traded to the Panthers. Is there any like kind of under the radar guy you're seeing out there that would apply to fantasy that you maybe think
fantasy
could be a
sleeper? Jeez, Nick, you help me out here. I always text Nick when I need a fantasy something or other with the fantasy, right, Nick? You're my guy. He's the fantasy guru that I hit up. You know, as far as production goes, I mean, I'll go back to Raquel. I think the Penguins power play since the ball dropped on the new year has been electric. It's kind of hit a stale spot here in the last seven games. It did get two goals last night against Buffalo. You know, but where does Raquel fit in on that? If he can get going and get up with Gino, I know they're going to mix some lines around here. They started him on the third line. I saw him with Gino a little bit. I saw him with Sid's line a little bit as well, as Rodriguez is up there. I don't know if they're going to put Rust back up there again, because Rust is having a heck of a season as well. But where does he fit in? Is he going to be now? Can he bump maybe Rust off of that first power play unit as a right-handed shot on the flank? It'd be interesting to see like where he kind of slots in and what he can do after having, you know, an okay season, I guess, in Anaheim. Not great comparatively what we're used to seeing, like a 50-point, 30-goal guy possibly. But can he get back on that clip and on that pace and contribute? I think the Pens power play could be pretty lethal here down the stretch. And where does he fit in? So I know they're trying to ease him in, but I think he's, you know, he's a guy that I would look at it. His numbers starting to probably pop a little bit more being on the Pens and playing with, you know, Gino or Sid, because he can play left wing, he can play right wing, he can play center. The versatility of him is huge. And if he can get going a little hot, I know Sullivan's willing to use him and take looks at him in different positions. So he's a guy that could probably produce and put up some numbers if he can get going and find some chemistry.
And Army, in the fantasy world, we call that the garden seat, which you had a lot with the Pittsburgh Penguins. Like you were a guy I was picking up for a daily stream because you're playing with Sid, the attachment, you're scoring a goal off your ass. Like we didn't know what was going to happen that night, but you're the type of grinder like you need. And I think Ricard Raquel, like I could see him in a perfect, you know, scenario for Pittsburgh. I see him on the third line because I think you want depth in this day and age. And the reason why I bring that word up, I think Pete and I are in agreement. It's like the Florida Panthers, and it's tough to anoint a winner at this point in time of the deadline. But the way I see it, Colby, they picked up the top rental, Claude Giroux, and they picked up a top defenseman in Ben Chiarot. What do you make of Florida, not only now, but their prospects of winning the cup? And I said it on the last podcast, I'd like to see like a Uwe Krupp revenge series with Colorado and Florida.
You might get that, man. You might get that. Of course, Uwe Krupp, big shot from the line, right? We remember that one for Colorado. But I would, it's hard not to look at Florida and say like these guys, you know, on top of everything they've had, you know, really hit a home run for trade deadline. I think, you know, they have guys scattered through their lineup, important players, Giroux obviously being the main piece, but let's not forget about some of the stuff they've done previously to this. I think, you know, we like the Marchman pickup, we could just touch on that. I mean, he was a Leaf for a little while and goes to Florida and all of a sudden he's this like complimentary player that's, you know, big body, can score. I love guys like that, by the way, but even like years back, Duclair, you know, Sam Bennett has worked out amazingly there. Reinhardt's been a horse there. You know, you flip it back even further. A few years ago, what was it? Hornquist came in and kind of changed the vibe of that team. You know, they've been kind of like an easy to play against team. They didn't have that pop or you know, fire, I guess, or like intensity. It's a little easy to get a little bit, you know, I think, forgetful when you're in a market like that, and it's a little quiet and you're not feeling like, you know, you're in the fire as much. And I think Hornquist brought like that attitude there. Then they go, oh man, we got to get more guys. And like the Reinhardts, the Bennetts, you know, Declare's play, Marchment's play, you know, they've just added all these like guys. Uyghur's play on the back end. The guy's an absolute stud. He'll fight too. He plays physical. So, you know, with Ekblad going down, I think, you know, the Chiarot move was even bigger for them here down the stretch. And they're going to get in the playoffs handily. But, you know, just to have all these big body guys, they're tough to play against, the complementary pieces with the skill. They can score like maniacs. They score themselves out of trouble. Like it's effortless for them. They're like, what's their goals per game? I think they're first in the league. I think they're over four goals. I don't think a team has done that since the 94-95 Penguins, I believe. So had anything over four goals per game. So this is a juggernaut of a team. And, you know, they've got great balance. They've got great balance on their lines, but they've got great balance through their lineup with a lot of different factors, a lot of different pieces. I think, you know, in the East, at least anyway, for me, I know it's hard to overlook Carolina as well, but just for the big moves that they've made in the last 2-3 years, especially this trade deadline, have kind of set them up to have a all-in attitude with this team this year if they can get it done. What is there a question mark on their team? Maybe Bobrovsky's playoff performances. I don't know, but you know, to have young guy and Spencer Knight, you never know what can happen in the playoffs, of course. But they're pretty stacked, man. It's hard not to look at them and see what they've done already this year and go, well, with the moves they made, that wasn't like a massive deadline or a massive trades that they've, you know, been able to put in their lineup.
And Uyghur was awesome last year down the stretch when Ekblad got injured. Similar timing, he was like point per game, and
is he like not 17. One of the sneakier like undercover like good D of the league? I mean, sure. Unbelievable what he's able to do, and like the player that he is there. So I think he's a guy that kind of sneaks under the radar of, you know, good D men in the league and also good complimentary D men too. Like, you know, you got to have that guy that kind of, you know, is that support guy. And he just brings like a different factor with whoever he's paired with. So was he paired with Chiarot now? We get a look at them. I think they play tonight finally. So we'll see all these guys in the lineup and we'll get a taste and a look and what this lineup kind of looks like with some of the new faces that they've added.
And they add another humble leader. I feel like Barkov and Huberdeau are not big egos or anything. And Giroux is the same kind of mold. So we'll see how that can translate to the playoffs. I know Giroux has been itching to get over the hump in the postseason for his entire career with a couple of deep runs. So we'll see how that happens. So with Ekblad going down, the Norris Trophy race, Colby, definitely has narrowed a little bit. And Cale Makar, I feel like, has been the favorite all year. But all of a sudden, you got Roman Josi, who's on pace for 100 points.
He's
on pace for 100 points in 80 games, not even 82. Like, I mean, did this guy win?
Like, those two guys are out of their minds, though. Like, completely out of their minds, the way they play. It's insane. Like, the way they use their legs, the way they control a game with their legs, like, the way they, like, Roman Josi, like, when he's on the ice, like, completely runs the show. Like, he is involved all over the ice. He lugs the puck up. It's just, like, cutting across the middle. He gives it to someone else, but he continues in a rotation, gets it back. Like, he's absolutely electric. I don't know. You know, both those guys are on such a different planet when it comes to one defending and playing the position, as well as contributing offensively in the way that they are up the ice and through the neutral zone and contributing to their team. So it's, you know, to pick between those two is challenging. I like Makar a lot. He looks like Nathan MacKinnon on defense. It's like, wow, he's from like another planet. But, you know, to see what Roman Josi, the way he handles and controls games completely for his team in Nashville, and maybe obviously a little less punch and kind of how he does it, you know, involving everybody is pretty amazing to see his game. And if I had to vote, I'd probably give it to Josi right now, just because, you know, the quality of teams is much different, but Yossi's just that's a tough question, Pete. That's a tough question. I'll give it to Josi. That's just my opinion.
Yeah, that's what we do in this podcast. We ask tough questions, but I'm giving him the Lifetime Achievement Award, which means he's always going to be involved. He's got the Victor Hedman status where you don't win anymore. Sorry. I think it's going to Makar. I don't know why. I just got that feeling.
Yeah, probably is.
Tough to repeat, but Yossi's been on an unbelievable run. You can't overlook that mark either. Since Pete brought up the Norris, I want to ask you about the Hart Trophy. And you know me, like, I live here in Toronto, and you know how much I watch the game, not just the Toronto Maple Leafs and their 17 jerseys that they wear. I'm still on Shesterkin, my man. Just without Shesterkin, the Rangers are not the same team. Where do you stand in the Hart Trophy conversation? Obviously, Matthews fully entrenched in that convo for sure. Shesty, Connor McDavid. I got people tweeting about Connor McDavid at me again. Like, people are all over my mentions right now, man. It's a hot dumpster fire in my mentions, but I get it. When you put out hot takes, you're going to get it back. Where do you stand with the Hart Trophy?
Yeah, it's hard not to always think about Connor when it comes to that, just because he's just the production that he does for a team that's kind of in the middle, I guess, is pretty amazing. Like, him and Leon and what they do, but like and kind of the way he does it, right? Like, he's of our generation right now, which I have an 11-year-old son that sits on YouTube and watches all those YouTube type goals. And man, does he give you you could play his clips forever. And you know, he's just absolutely dominant, electric. But I don't know. I Shesterkin's been awesome. And I think the stats bear out that, like, through much of the season, the Rangers aren't as good as possibly they had appeared. It was a lot to do with Shesterkin. Although I think a very good team, an exciting team to watch. And man, did they bolster their lineup a little bit too, in the depths of their lineup. So maybe, you know, people say, are they a year ahead? Maybe, but you know, they're taking a little crack at it this year and see what can happen. You never know. It's hard not to look at Austin Matthews though. And you know, see the kind of player he is. It's easy to look at his goals. It's easy to look at his stats and that'll get him in the conversation. But when you watch him play as well, I think the player that he's really morphed into, and one of my criticisms of his game, if there are any, was that he's a big guy, but he like didn't know he was big. It's like he just played. He was good. He has that shot. He's got the release. He can create. But like, he never like imposed his body on games. He never imposed like his size and like the way he could change games and dominate games. And I think, you know, from, you know, steals or picking guys' pockets to using his body in battles to like get pucks off of guys on the defensive side, or, you know, get second and third opportunities, keep plays alive. And then you add the stats in on top of it, and the way that he's, you know, kind of learned to use his body to like impose himself. It's like he's completely morphed himself into a completely different, like, game-changing leader for this team. You know, like, goals and points are nice, but when you are changing the game with your body and your style and your way of play, I give him a lot of credit, and, you know, the numbers are right there for him. I think you look at it with him, and the amount of goals he's able to produce is out of this world. So For me, he'd probably have to be there. If you really watch him and really look at like the totality of his game, is pretty impressive and has been impressive.
He's definitely the favorite for me. I mean, I think with Toronto, I don't know if they got significantly better at the deadline. They're really relying on Campbell to come back and be in elite form, which could happen. But
they've got to have like Dubas has to have like little voodoo dolls up in his room with Campbell and like he feeds him in the morning. He just rubs his back, trying to get him going. So, yeah, it's funny in the position that they've fallen into with the goaltending situation. That was like one of the best stories of the year that has now turned into like people kind of crossing their fingers and toes going, please have this work out. Please have this work out. It's amazing. It's amazing to watch. And of course, the scrutiny, the microscope is turned up to 10 times on the microscope where you're seeing literally you're like, is that Campbell? All I can see is hair. Like, what's going on here?
When I look at like that division, I'm even siding with the Boston Bruins over the Leafs right now. And I might even be warming up to the Bruins over the Tampa Bay Lightning. I mean, they're going to meet on Thursday. And my hunch is that Boston is the deeper team right now, the more confident team. Wouldn't be surprised if those teams met at some point, if Boston would win that series. They got three strong lines. They're adding Hampus Lindholm, Colby to their top pair with Charlie Mack. I mean, really exciting about the renewed ceiling of the Bruins. What are your thoughts on them?
It's scary for Leaf fans, right? It's like, and if you're watching from the outside, you're like, this is hilarious because, you know, you kind of are like, oh, man, this is not going to go good. It's kind of like working itself out to be almost like hilarious again. But yeah, Lindholm, massive pickup. I think Jake DeBrusque maybe leaving or wanting to leave to now like an extension and like playing on the top line. And what a turnaround. Marchand's coming out with cereal boxes. Life is good. You got Pasta, you got Bergie, you got it all going on for them right now with some depth and Holla and all these guys kind of slotting in. It's now working out, looking pretty good for them. And Lindholm, obviously massive. Like that is massive for them to, you know, pick up a guy of his caliber that can log and eat big minutes at plays, you know, up and down, unbelievable rock solid hockey. It's, you know, these little steady moves, you know, some of these teams, they like their group. They always say like, we like our group. We're almost there. Like, it's almost like, you know, we know what we got, you know, like, and I think the Bruins have always kind of known what they got. They just needed to, you know, a little tweak here or there, or one guy to kind of turn it around a little bit. And some of these lines, chemistry to kind of settle in. And you're right, Pete, I think, you know, the Bruins kind of have that flavor right now where you look at their lineup, you look at the possibility of the way they can play inside of that with, you know, their structure, and the way they've always kind of done it. And the NHL's nuts, man. Like you look at every team in every matchup and you're going, okay, like this isn't a guarantee. Like this isn't, it's not going to be easy. And I think the Bruins have kind of, you know, walked over to the line now with looking at it and going, okay, like, you know, these guys are legit. Like this is not just like an easy walkthrough team that was kind of searching for certain pieces and everything to fall into place. They found like a little bit of identity and some pieces that can enhance it.
Yeah, that was definitely one of my takeaways from the deadline. It's just the Atlantic Division guys isn't messing around. I was just going to bring up that the last time the Leafs have won a playoff series, Colby, 2004. Do you know where you were in 2004? You
were in Wilkes-Barre.
Sophomore season in the AHL. And you played 24 games in the playoffs that year, by the way, but I don't want to bring it up, but Milwaukee got the best of you guys, right?
They did. They swept us in the Calder Cup final that year, which was that that was the lockout season, I believe.
I think it was the year before.
Oh, it was the year before the lockout. We lost the next year during the lockout season in the playoffs when we had another really good team. Like, remember Pittsburgh had just like had all these prospects stockpiled down in the minors and they were having money troubles and everything. So we had all these guys down there. So we had pretty good team. So Milwaukee tap danced on us in the finals. Darren Haydar and all their guys. I mean, they gave it to us. He's unbelievable in the minors. So then the next year we lost to Philly. I'll never forget it. That was like a brutal loss for us. It was really tough to handle. We kind of were in a little bit of control of the series, and then one game went off the rails, but they added Carter and Richards out of junior that year. And when they came in there, they like, unbelievable to say, they changed their lineup. Like, those guys were studs for them in the Phantoms. And obviously the rest is history with what they were able to do in their careers. They didn't wait or stay too long in the minors. Not like myself there, Nick, 3.5 years in Wilkes-Barre, yeah. seasoned.
Your hockey DB is something else. Not really. I got a couple more, and then I'll wrap from my side. Like, every time I interview you and talk to you, like, even in person, I need to hear like a good Atlanta Thrasher story. I talked to Anthony Stewart, say the same thing. You know, I love my boy Kari Lehtinen, Dick Tarnstrom. You got anything for us here?
Yeah, well, I'm trying to think of anything that's awesome. I remember one time when we went out in New York City and we went and ate dinner. This is a stupid story, but I thought it was so cool. We went to a bar in New York City and, like, what do you expect in New York City? Like, I don't know who you're going to see. I didn't expect anything. I thought we were just going to go out and have dinner and then maybe pop into this one place and it'd be kind of nice. And we ended up being at this one place, and it just turned out through, like, some kind of connections through, like, you know, Marty Reisner knew a guy that owned a restaurant. I don't know how it totally shook out, but we were at John Legend's birthday party and he was, like, playing and singing. And, like, right before we went down, I saw, like, Ludacris outside. I was like, oh, that's cool. And then it was totally one of those, like, New York things. And I was with a few of the guys and Eric Bolton, who's like all time, like, one of the most funniest teammates I played with. And he was just, like, laughing. He was loving it. So, other than that, with the Thrashers, man, other than that, getting like 8 shots on goal in Buffalo, which is one of the more embarrassing moments of games. I think that was what we had the one night. It was somewhere around there. It was just not a good night. Other than that, great place to live, man. I'll say that. Unbelievable. I'm sure Stewie would tell you the same. Great place to live. And I still talk to people back there, friends, still dear friends to this day. So it's too bad that hockey didn't work out there, because I think living there and visiting there is a pretty nice, a nice place and a nice draw. Not enough put into hockey, for my opinion, of what they did with the Thrashers. So, and those damn jerseys, right? Like, what the heck?
The blue ones.
I know we talked about the Leaf ones. What were we doing? Like the swirly bird on the front and all this? I don't know what was going on.
No, it's definitely a great sports city for sure. At least they got the TNT guys down there, right?
Yeah, they do.
A little presence in Atlanta now. Great. For the short term, at least. So
the great one ripping around on TNT. I love it. Yeah, they were on last night.
Hey, Petey, I got one more for Colby before we wrap here. Can I do it?
Yeah, for sure, man.
So Colby, you know, pre-lockout we met or whatever when I was working at Sportsnet, or even before that actually, but you started to dabble into some fantasy hockey, right? Your son Cruiser, I guess you were a co-manager with Cruz, but you used to annoy me a lot, man. It was
used to hit you up, tweet at you, try to get some scoops on things. Yeah, that was new. And my kid had a fantasy.
You still playing?
No, we're not. I haven't played in a little while, but I do keep track of trends and all that stuff, obviously, with my job, but it's like not to the degree of thinking of fantasy. I think it's just like out of this world. It's like lent a whole new, like, you know, look at players and opportunity and schedule. And, you know, like the gambling thing is huge, but the fantasy will always kind of be like the tip of the spear for understanding players and who to get and why to get them. And I always find that fairly interesting, which is why I came to you, because you're like so on top of like the latest of like how, you know, things may shake out or will shake out, and you know, even like looking so far into the future at schedules and where things are going to lay or sit is so important. It's so damn time consuming, right? I feel I'm trying to do it in football and everything, and it's just like I get killed because I'm like, oh crap, forgot to set my roster today.
You're that
like,
guy.
Just like,
I knew
I'm
it.
That guy.
You're
that I'm guy. The loser. I'm the forgetful loser. Yeah. So set it and forget it. That's my move with fantasy, buddy. But you're right. You helped us out. Cruiser was in my son a few years ago. He would have been about 9-10 years old. They had a little fantasy team with their hockey team, little tournament type of deal. So it was interesting. All the kids were involved, and it's funny who they pick or who they think is good or what they, you know, deem when they don't know, or just little things that they like. It's cool to see the kids at that age and you know, some of the picks they get and what they say about each player, it's like kind of completely different from like what we would look at and probably see, you know?
Well, you mentioned like the betting stuff and of course how it's intertwined with fantasy, and we're always trying to find that team like that's maybe a sneaky team that could actually win the cup. You could talk about a path to getting out of the Pacific Division or trying to get out of the Metro or something like that as being, you know, you could put your stock into a team to get there, but to actually win it, is there anyone other than the obvious favorites out there that you have your eye on around the league?
Oh, I'll say this, and this is crazy for me to say because I live in Pittsburgh and
here we go.
No, but I'm concerned. I get like a little concerned just when I look at like the Capitals.
Oh, okay.
And I know that they've got like a core group. I know that they've got like, you know, the means to, you know, be dangerous. And I think they get little guys a little bit more healthy. Did you see Carlson going on the boards the other day? I don't know how he's like out and about. Like that was absolutely a car crash of a hit into the end boards. But, you know, some of their guys, I think Oshie's a massive factor for them. If he can, you know, get his feet under him, get healthy and be a factor. I know lots of question marks about their goaltending, but for whatever reason, I don't know, like maybe it's just like they played the Penguins so often in the playoffs. We know that their core group guys can kind of get it done. They play like a big body style of game as well. That's kind of tailor-made maybe for a playoff series as well. It's like, it's hard not to look at them and count them out. I know they're in the eighth spot right now, the second wild card, and you never know what's going to happen, but
you never know.
If I just look at their lineup, I look at their team and I say, if they get healthy and can find a groove, you never know what that group can do with the guys they have. So it always kind of, they're always been kind of like a scary, dangerous team, you know?
It's tough for a former Pittsburgh Penguin to admit that.
Marc-Andre
Fleury, same thing. I don't think you really wanted to go to Washington for reasons known.
We
could be with you for like 15 hours, man. Like, appreciate the time. This has been so fun. And we hope you get back into the fantasy game soon, okay?
Thanks, buddy. Yeah, well, if I do, you'll know. Your phone will be blowing up. So, thanks for having me on, boys. I appreciate it. The sprint to the finish, and we'll see how everything kind of slots in going into the playoffs.
The one and only Colby Armstrong, need I say more, Petey, to the listener questions. And thank you to everybody. I know it's a crazy, hectic time of year in the fantasy world. A lot of great ones this week. We always get great questions from our listeners and our followers. Nico Hischier, we were asked about him. He's starting to cook in a big way, Petey.
I like Hischier. I mean, he had a totally injury-ravaged season last year, barely played at all. And it was one of those things where you wondered, would this guy ever return to the form? I mean, how could someone get through that many injuries? And some were severe, too, last year. Would he ever rediscover that form from his rookie season and live up to the potential of being such a high pick? The answer is yes, he's back. He's been back. Then he missed a couple games, came back, and still performing at a high level. When he's playing with Jesper Bratt, you know that he has that supporting cast. That maybe in previous years he didn't always have on the wing. So I've been really impressed by Nico Hischier. And we got one question where someone was asking, would I rather have Matthew Barzal or Robert Thomas for the rest of the season? My answer would be neither. I'd rather have Nico Hischier. And I might even consider a guy like Kevin Hayes, who I mentioned earlier, who's a good injury replacement if you're trying to replace. Like, I know Thomas has been banged up lately, so keep an eye on that. But yeah, I'm really into what Hischier's building and what the Devils did to the Rangers the other night, for sure.
Yeah, that was a dissection. And I even tweeted out, I wonder if maybe Auston Matthews pulled ahead of Shesterkin a bit in that Hart Trophy conversation. But I'm with you. Like, Barzal, something's up there, I think. Just hasn't been the same player since coming back. He was on a bit of a torrid stretch. Around the All-Star break, just hasn't been the same player. But the Islanders, as you know, are starting to cook. And I'm probably with you. Like, Robert Thomas is a guy, as you know, I'm big on, but he just can't stay healthy. He was out with an illness lately. Now he's out with an injury. I wonder too, the Blues are in a 4-game week next week and some fantasy playoffs start next week. So I think it's time to make difficult decisions. Among them, we've been getting a lot of questions about Golden Knights players, Pete, who are banged up, and we all know the predicament they're in right now. I believe with that trade, and that was like a real life veto. We see vetoes happen in fantasy hockey all the time when it comes to trades. This happened in real life. But I believe this negates them from maybe activating Mark Stone, who I think, you know, from what I hear, the reason why they made this trade or were trying to do so was trying to activate Mark Stone sooner rather than later. But now they got him and Martinez. We know there's something up with both guys. But Mark Stone, should people drop him? Pacioretty, you know, I mentioned you got to make tougher decisions this time of year, right?
Yeah, I mean, I would hold on to Stone and Pacioretty because I just have a hard time believing that the Golden Knights are going to miss the playoffs without any fight. I know that they're on the outs right now and things aren't in their favor. They're still a resilient team. They're still a team that we expected at the beginning of the season to be one of the top contenders for the Cup. So I don't think they'll go down without a fight. I think one or both of Pacioretty and Stone will be back before the end of the regular season. That's just my feeling on the matter. I'm not in the inner circle, but that's what I'm kind of hoping for and expecting. So I would not cut the cord on him. But I know a lot of people are asking about Ekblad, too, with the long-term IR. He might have to cut the cord there. Drew Doughty, same thing. If he's not going to play for the rest of the regular season, which is a possibility, he might have to cut the cord there. Gabriel Landeskog, same type of thing. But those Vegas guys, I would hold on to them for as long as you possibly can on IR.
And again, the caveat being that if you don't have any IR spaces or anything like that, like IR plus, like clearly if you know that happens, then you just stash these guys away and you hope for the best moving forward. But yeah, these are the type of questions we are getting this time of year. And certainly, Pete, over the next couple of weeks leading into another question is like deadline fallout, right? Like we talk a lot about Rickard Rakell, but like a sneaky name that's been emerging the first couple of games is actually Taylor Radish in the top six for Chicago.
Yeah, I actually liked what I saw from Radish earlier in the year for one stretch, at least with Tampa. And there's an opportunity in Chicago. There's some good line mates there. Even if you're on the second line, you're with like Taves and Kubalik, the top line. I think we have to start taking Dylan Strome more seriously just because he's, you know, he's sticking there. They didn't trade him. Maybe they want to keep him. Maybe they want him to be a part of their top line going into next season with Kane and DeBrincat. So there's some sneaky value up there. There's also some sneaky value in Seattle. I saw Daniel Sprong scored in his first game with the Kraken. There's Vince Dunn taking on a bigger role. He's been producing lately. We added him to the top 50 defenseman rankings in the last spot. So, you know, some of these teams out there, Nick, right? Nobody's been rostering Kraken guys, but between those two guys I mentioned, Jared McCann, there's some sneaky appeal for streamers if the schedule works out in any given week for you.
Well, that's exactly it. I love Colby brought up the whole schedule thing, which I think is great because, you know, I love my schedule in fantasy. But Seattle's a team next week, not this week, obviously, with the two-game slate next week. They got the four-game slate, and it's a pretty favorable schedule at that. So I do think some value could emerge in Seattle as they settle in. Like, players will never tell you, but like polling people around the league, like there's a lot of pressure around deadline time. And I think the picture is becoming slightly clearer, the long game, if you will, with the Seattle Kraken. And I think there'll be some undercover value, especially in plum roles and assignments. Like, you know, they took care of Arizona, which is great to see. So maybe Philip Grubauer, like, there's a reason why some of these guys were paid. It's understandable. And it happens everywhere in this league where guys seem to struggle. And certainly when you get paid lots of money, there's a lot of pressure to succeed. So Philip Grubauer is actually a guy I'm looking at rest of season. And I wonder about, I'm going to put him on my watch list for now, but there's a reason why he was a Vezina finalist last year, Pete.
Again, if you roster someone like that or a Craig Anderson, who's playing well for Buffalo, like you don't have to play that guy every single matchup. If they have a matchup at Tampa Bay, just sit him on your bench, you know, but more times than not, those guys return value every other start, you know, so it's something that you could consider. I'm not so sure that I would go the Philip Grubauer route based on what I've seen with him in Seattle. But, you know, could he go on a 5-10 game heater to finish up the season and kind of redeem himself a little bit? Absolutely. And, you know, I think that team has dealt with injuries as well. Seattle, they have some decent players on the team. Obviously, the expectations were much higher, but they're not as bad as they have looked, I think, the first, you know, 3-4 months of the season.
But now they've been stripped down a bit, too, with the deadline. You lose Giordano. So I think as a fantasy owner, and I'm happy you brought that up, you look at replacement options. Vince Dunn comes to mind. Like, guys are going to be elevated up the lineup a bit, so don't sleep on that, certainly. I just wanted to add to wrap, too, like a couple names I'm looking at. Kyler Yamamoto of the Edmonton Oilers has really started to cook, and he's got the McDavid attachment. Edmonton in general has been playing some much better hockey as of late. I know they blew the lead the other night, but still, like, they look much better in fantasy. And, like, don't snooze on Peter Mrazek. Like, somebody has to take the crease. And I thought Toronto looked much more sheltered, if you want to call it, defensively. I know the Devils were on the back-to-back on Wednesday, but right. I think Mrazek is a pro. He's been in this league, a significant amount of time, and you're going to go through your ups, you're going to go through your downs. So again, that's another guy I'd have on my watch list. Again, with Jack Campbell hurt, and you know the sample size really, really small on Eric Sjogren.
A couple other guys that caught my eye. Good to see Jacob Vrana bounce back the other day. Yep. He was in a little dry spell, but don't drop that player if you can afford to. Also, Quinton Byfield had a big breakout game the other day.
Yes.
With all the injuries in LA, some of these guys are going to have to step up and take bigger roles and see production bumps, whether it's a Durzi on defense on the power play one, maybe a little Quinton Byfield would be nice down the stretch, right, for the high hopes we have for that player. So, yeah, just keep an eye on those LA Kings. They're a deep team with a lot of prospects and a lot of upside, even though they're without all these guys, Doughty, Arvidsson, Athanasiu, et cetera.
Arthur Kaliev's another guy I would throw in that conversation. Like, we're always looking to extract that bit of juice, right? Especially this time of year. So, last thing I'll say is, like, good luck to everybody. If you're in, one of my keeper leagues, I'm getting going with my playoffs next week. So the pressure is really, really on, but that's why you have to keep it locked. Make sure to like, subscribe, leave us a review, because this is when we get paid the big bucks, or why we get paid the big bucks, to give the advice this time of year, Petey.
And one more nugget I have, I was impressed by Andrew Kopp. He was one of the only bright spots for the Rangers when they got thrashed by the New Jersey Devils on the road the other night. 2 assists, saw a little time in a lot of different lineup placements, including top line right wing. So, keep an eye on Andrew Kopp. I would even go so far to say he's approaching must add territory.
I'm with you.
I know every league is different, but with his position eligibility and his category coverage and versatility that the Rangers are going to utilize, I really like that Kopp addition. The more that I think about it,
it's funny, like it's how you can be upgraded from a top six in Winnipeg to Broadway, but like it certainly feels that way. Like anytime a player gets attachment, permanent attachment at that, it seems like, I think he's able to supersede what they have. Like Frank Vatrano is going to be a third line, second line, like middle six type guy. Alexis Lafreniere has been up and down throughout the season. We know Kako's out, so I think, most importantly, the opportunity is there for Kopp in the top six, but I don't think you can overlook that attachment to the Panarins, to the Stroms, to the Zibanejads, to the Kreiders. So yeah, I'm with you. Like, I think he's certainly approaching that must add territory.
And we'll see if Kaapo Kakkonen can play spoiler. Sounds like he's starting Thursday against Edmonton. Edmonton needs that game. They needed their last game, Nick. They blew the game against Dallas. Could San Jose and Kakkonen play spoiler? Maybe sneak him into your DFS lineup if you have the opportunity. I'm excited for his debut in San Jose. We'll talk to you again next week for week 23. Like Nick said, we'll get into the playoff matchups, the schedule manipulation for fantasy purposes, without a doubt. So for Nick Alberga, thanks again, Colby Armstrong from Sportsnet, for joining us. Pete Jensen saying so long. Thanks for listening to NHL Fantasy on Ice.